This is the last of a series of three talks on the ethnic origins of the peoples of Southwest Virginia. It is on the Scots-Irish in Virginia. Contention and argumentativeness accompany the Scots-Irish wherever they have gone. Even the terminology used in discussing them is contested even to this day. There is an ethnic strip across Britain which lies between Scotland and England, and which has been contested throughout history. At times the Scots possessed it, and at times the English did. The people who lived there grew to hate both, as the coming of armies from either direction spelled trouble for them. They were neither truly Scottish nor truly English. The first term applied to them was Lowland Scots. The more modern term in current academic use is the Border People. The borderlands were finally conquered by the English, who assumed ownership of the land and rented it back to the natives. The plots were very small, an acre being a large tract. These people were then called crofters. They eked out a starvation-level existence until the English invented steam-powered machinery to make woolen cloth, such as the spinning jenny and the steam loom. At this point, it became far more profitable to consolidate the crofts into massive sheep-raising pastures. This created a massive surplus of populations in the border country. The crofters were displaced and sent off to Northern Ireland, or Ulster. The term Ulsterman was born. They did not get along with a native Irish Catholic. When the English colonies in North America opened up, large numbers of these people migrated to Boston, which had been started by fellow Calvinists, to Philadelphia, where the Quakers offered freedom of religion, and to Virginia, which offered them land in the valley, where they would serve as a buffer between the English and the Tidewater and the Indians to the west. What to call these people quickly became an issue. Regional differences developed and continue to this day. In Boston, they are known as the Lace Curtain Irish, as opposed to the later arrived Irish Catholic, who is referred to as the Shanty Irish. During the American Revolution, many of these people moved to Ontario, where they are known today simply as the Irish. From Pennsylvania on south, the terms of either Scotch-Irish or Scots-Irish prevail. Though these terms go back to Elizabethan times, the settlers in America originally referred to themselves simply as Irish. It was only after the arrival of large numbers of Irish Catholics that American descendants of the border people began to distinguish themselves from the later arrivals as Scots-Irish. From 1710 until the Revolution, over 200,000 people immigrated from Ulster to America. Accurate records were not kept, and people today argue whether most first went to Pennsylvania or straight to Virginia. In the late 1720s, an Ulsterman named James Patton started a shipping business in Britain, having as a partner an English merchant named Walter Lutwyche, who bankrolled him. Patton was from a low level of Irish gentry and married well into the same class. In 1730, he began to import Irish indentures into the land in the Great Valley that was in litigation between Lord Fairfax and the governor of colonial Virginia. His method of operation was to bring his ships into the headwaters of navigation of the Rappahannock River at a place then known as Robb's Hole, now as Tappahannock. Indian trails from there passed through the Blue Ridge Mountains through several gaps into the Great Valley of Virginia. On his return trip to Ireland, Patton took tobacco and furs, which changed for more indentures. Among those Irish who came to Virginia by this manner was John Lewis, whom Patton transported in 1732. Patton made himself wealthy in this trade. In 1736, William Beverly patented 118,941 acres on the Little Cow Pasture River, encompassing today in most of Augusta County, which contains the city of Lexington. It included the land where Patton had been settling his Irish indentures. The dispute between Lord Fairfax and the governor of Virginia had been settled. The same year, William Penn kicked out of Pennsylvania several Irish because, being Irish, they had settled where they had been specifically told not to do so, that is to say, on land reserved by treaty to the Indians. This land in Virginia was officially named Beverly Manor, but on the practical level, it was soon to be called the Irish Tract. That year, the Irish who had been run out of Pennsylvania came to Beverly Manor, settling mostly to the northwest of Lexington on what was then called Tea Creek, but soon acquired the name of Carr's Creek. That's spelled K-E-R-R apostrophe S, but pronounced Carr. In 1737, Beverly made a deal with Patton and gave him 1/4 of Beverly Manor in exchange for bringing in more Irish settlers. Without benefit of divorce, Patton married Beverly's daughter, Mary. Patton also embezzled Walter Ludwich, who led this worthy to remark, quote, "Of all the knaves I have ever met, Patton was outdone them all. Hell itself cannot outdo him," end quote. Their daughter, also Mary, married Captain William Thompson, Jr., whose descendants settled Thompson Valley of Tazewell County. Their daughter, Margaret, married Colonel John Buchanan, of whom we have spoken in the talk on Virginia's German immigrants. He will appear again in this discussion about the Irish in Virginia. Patton brought over his former brother-in-law, John Preston, who married Thompson's sister. The Prestons loom huge in the history of the Abington area. John Lewis and Patton formed a partnership and got a grant for 10,500 acres on the Calf Pasture River. Major Charles Campbell was born in Ireland and immigrated to the Irish Tract with his father, Patrick. They were neighbors of Captain James Patton and Benjamin Burden, whose name is frequently listed as Borden in the old histories. Burden had been administrator of Lord Fairfax's land, the Northern Neck in Virginia. Charles inherited Patrick's 1/4 interest in Beverly Manor. Charles was the father of General William Campbell of Royal Oak, which was, during the Revolution, renamed Marion after Francis Marion, the South Carolina swamp fox. Charles was also the discoverer and owner of the salt deposits at Saltville. Charles Campbell married Margaret Buchanan, the daughter of Colonel John Buchanan of Aspenvale, who was the son-in-law of Colonel James Patton. Buchanan had earlier settled at Cherry Tree Bottom, which was the first name given to the town that was later named after him. He then got a grant for Aspen Tree Bottom, just west of 7 Mile Ford, and built his estate there, which he named Aspenvale. Charles worked for Patton as a surveyor during the Patton Expedition of 1748. In the 1740s, the royal governor and the House of Burgesses set up the Loyal Company, which received a massive land grant that included most of the Great Valley of Virginia. James Patton received his own land grant and also served as agent for the Loyal Company. Patton led an expedition at least as far as Kingsport, Tennessee, and perhaps as far as Middlesboro, Kentucky, to discover and to survey this land. These interrelated families got the cream of it. In 1753, Colonel John Buchanan also got the original land grant for Royal Oak. In 1769, he conveyed it to John Campbell, who months later conveyed it to Arthur Campbell, Charles's nephew. At some point, Charles Campbell came to live in Aspenvale, which became known as his estate. Charles was one of the 15 men who signed the Fincastle Resolutions. Charles died in 1767, and his son William inherited the Salt Lick Tract from him. The Aspenvale Cemetery, located between Chilhowie and Seven Mile Ford, is the first cemetery in Virginia to be designated as a National Historic Site. Buried there are General William Campbell, Elizabeth Henry Campbell, Russell, Henry Campbell, General Francis Preston, and Sarah Buchanan Campbell Preston. General William Campbell was born in Cross Creek Township, Pennsylvania. His father was Charles. His wife was Elizabeth Betsy Henry, sister of Patrick Henry. They had several children, but only Sarah survived. He fought at Point Pleasant in Lord Dunmore's War and was leader of the militia that won the Battle of King's Mountain and died in 1781, serving under Lafayette at the Siege of Yorktown. William Elizabeth remarried General William Russell of Castlewood and became known as Madam Russell. She was Russell's second wife and not the mother of Henry Russell, who was killed by Indians along with James Boone, the son of Daniel. Let us return to John Lewis, who was in partnership with James Patton on the Calf Pasture River. He became a colonel in the Augusta Militia. He was the father of Brigadier Andrew Lewis, of whom we will discuss later. Colonel John, under the name the Greenbrier Company, got a 100,000-acre grant in the Greenbrier Valley of what is now West Virginia. The major town there, Lewisburg, is named after him. This was considered by the French, fortified at present Pittsburgh, to have been hardcore French territory. Indeed, Greenbrier is but the English translation of the French term for the place, which is Roncefort. The French and Indian War broke out in 1754. Ownership of the Greenbrier Valley was one of the root causes. Andrew Lewis by this time had succeeded to his father's position within the militia, and in 1755 he accompanied the Virginia militia at Braddock's defeat. This disaster left Virginia's frontier open to attack, and the French allied Indians attacked the settlers in the Greenbrier and the New River Valley. James Patton was one of the first killed at Draper's Meadow on what is now the Virginia Tech campus that very year. The French and Indians correctly viewed the Irish Tract as being the basic source of their problems in the Greenbrier, and they conducted the Carr Creek massacres there in 1759, 1763, and in 1764. In 1756, South Carolina and Virginia agreed to cooperate in building a fort near the mouth of the Little Tennessee River, about 30 miles to the southeast of present Knoxville, Tennessee, to protect the Cherokee from the French. Andrew Lewis, under the command of Colonel William Byrd III, was dispatched to build a road to this site and to build Fort Loudon there. The road started in 1760 at Fort Chiswell, Virginia, and became the first improvement to the west on what is now Interstate 81. As the road got no further than Long Island on the Holston at present Kingsport, it became known as the Island Road, a name that it carries to this day. In 1774, the Shawnee again started an invasion of Virginia. Andrew Lewis led the Virginia militia out of Fort Frederick, which was located on the old Dunkard's Bottom settlement at Mahanium, near the Interstate 81 bridge over the New River at Radford. They collided with the Indians at Point Pleasant, where the Kanawha flows into the Ohio. The Kanawha is the name of the new river that it assumes in its lower course. The Battle of Point Pleasant was the most major battle fought between the Indians and the settlers in what has now become the United States of America. Andrew Lewis, Jr. was an active militia officer during the Chief Binge raids in southwest Virginia in the 1790s. Another line of famous people with connections to the Irish tract would include that of Judge Alexander Moore Stewart, who was born in the Irish tract of probable Irish lineage. He was the grandfather of two important men, Confederate General Jeb Stuart and his brother William Alexander Stuart. Jeb needs no introduction or discussion. His brother William Alexander is little known, but is of equal importance. Before the Civil War, he worked at the bank at Fort Chiswell. That bank served as the financial house for Southwest Virginia's two biggest industries, the lead mines at Austinville and the salt works at Saltville. It sat on the main highway in that part of the world, about halfway between the two. Just before the war began, the families who had owned and operated the salt works petered out and had sold the business to a New York salt broker named George Washington Palmer. Palmer was a smart man. He saw the war coming with greater clarity than most people and understood the major role that the Saltville Salt Works would play in it. He also knew better that he, as a Yankee, would be in need of Confederate cover. Because of his banking background and because who his brother was, Palmer chose William Alexander Stewart to be his partner at the Salt Works. Together they made themselves incredibly rich from the war. When Jeb Stuart was killed, his brother brought his widow Flora to Saltville and set her up as a schoolteacher. That combination home and school still stands in Saltville. After the war, Palmer bought William Alexander out. Stuart took his money and bought up several bankrupt plantations across Clinch Mountain, and had combined them into the Stuart Land and Cattle Company, which was the largest farm east of the Mississippi River. This farm still exists in Elk Garden, a section of Russell County. It contains several historic mansions of great significance. William Alexander's son, Henry Carter Stuart, became governor of Virginia. The Stuart family neighbors are the descendants of some of the people who were driven out of Carr's Creek during the French and Indian War. These folks carried with them the name of a massive mountain buttress from Carr's Creek to Elk Garden, in both cases known as the Loop. The brothers William and Colonel James King were born in Ireland and immigrated to southwestern Virginia. There is no record of any connection to the Irish tract. William settled in Montgomery County and soon moved to Saltville, where he became closely associated with the Prestons in the ownership and the management of the salt works. James acquired 50,000 acres around present Bristol, Virginia, Tennessee. He may have also passed through Montgomery County, as his wife was from there. He fought in the Revolution and was at Yorktown. After the war, he started an iron foundry in Bristol and later a mill at the mouth of Reedy Creek, just downstream from the mill at the head of a flatboat navigation on the Holston River. At the Netherland end, he built a boat yard. The boats carried his iron and his brother's salt to market. The city of Kingsport is named after him, as is the King's University at Bristol. We have already mentioned three of the sisters of Patrick Henry, who is customarily regarded as Virginia's most famous Scots-Irishman. Patrick owned land near Hansonville in Russell County and had loose connections to the plantation owners of Elk Garden. However, he does not completely fit the definition of Scots-Irish which we have been using. His grandfather, Alexander, was born in Aberdeenshire, Scotland, which is well within the highlands and not at all border country. Patrick's father, John Hendris Henry, whose place of birth is unknown, appeared in Hanover, near Richmond, Virginia. Patrick was born in Studley in that county, with no known ties to the Irish tract. There is no doubt that the Henry family associated with and intermarried with the traditional Scotch-Irish of the Valley. In summary of this series of three essays on the dominant ethnic groups of the peoples of Southwest Virginia, let us say that the Spanish Berber got here first, and by about a century. This gave them roughly a five-generation head start on peopling the region. The English settled Tidewater and strove to make it a little England. They did not want settlers in it who were not English, and certainly not dissenters from the Church of England. Therefore, they directed the Germans and the Scotch-Irish to the Great Valley of Virginia. They had hardly gotten there when the French and Indian War broke out and drove many of them into North Carolina. The Regulator Revolt of 1771 drove many of them back into Virginia through the mountain passes such as Mouth of Wilson. The Scotch-Irish became the upper class, but the three groups intermarried to produce the mountaineer of Southwest Virginia today. If anyone should wish to access the primary essays from which this last lecture was drawn, and which would contain extensive bibliographies of the original sources, you can Google BigStoneGapPublishing.org, go to its front page, and at the pull-down menu along the top, there is a term, Other Writings. Open it, and there are several essays, including one on James Patton, Kilmacrenan, and the Carrs Creek Massacres, which will serve as background for this final lecture. Thank you very much for your kind attention and best wishes.